Hello and welcome to match day two of the Pure Championship podcast. I'm Chris Sampson and I'm with Cammy Anderson. Are you good, Cammy?
Yeah, all good, Chris. How are you doing this week?
Yeah, I'm not too bad as well. I'm good. We had 16 goals and plenty of talking points to discuss for every team in the league this past weekend. So we're just going to get fired right into it, I think. Let's start with Queen of the South 2, Raith Rovers 5. Cammy, when should we hand Raith Rovers the league title?
Well, I think we're maybe a bit ahead of ourselves in saying that, but to be fair to Raith, they've started the season very, very well. They've done really well against Arbroath last weekend, and I mean, they've done even better this weekend against Queen of the South, and the attacking play from Raith is absolutely superb. So many options, and I mean, deserved winners, and against a very, very poor Queen of the South side too. I think the pair of us kind of have some worries about, even though we're only 2 weeks into the season.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we'll touch on Queens in a second, but let's focus on Raith Rovers and kind of their good attacking play. So, top of the league, 2 wins, 8 goals scored in 2 matches. The goal that I'm going to talk about is Ross Matthews' opener. Regan Tumulty played a lovely kind of measured, and I'm saying measured, long ball, because you can get a long ball and it's just aimless, but this one had a purpose with it, and it was straight into Manny Duku's chest. He kind of laid that down for Dylan Tate, and Dylan Tate played, I think, a lovely pass. I mean, we talked about one of his passes for Tumulty's goal last weekend, and this was another lovely assist. Matthews runs beyond the Queen of the South midfield, and Reece McCabe is absolutely nowhere near him. I think he's supposed to be tracking him. And it was just a lovely move. He kind of finishes it past the Queen's goalie. So 1-0, and that was probably my favourite goal of the game.
Yeah, I mean, that was a fantastic goal, and one of a few really good goals from Raith, actually. Granted, Queen of the South's defence massively helped Raith, but, I mean, as we said against when Raith played against Arbroath, there were times that they were like Bielsa's leads. There was a few instances in this one. It was for Duku's first goal that I actually noticed this, but rather than it being 5 or 6 Raith players against 1 or 2 opposition defenders, it was, let me just double-check this, 7 Queens players in the box when Manny Duku scored his first header. Now, the defending on show from Queens was absolutely laughable. When Duku, I mean, I'm going to just say it now, Manny Duku is an absolute baller.
I was going to ask you what you thought about him.
I mean, we spoke briefly about him last week, and he'd kind of done all right. He missed a sitter and won a few bits and certainly showed signs that he could be a good player. And, I mean, his performance went to a different level this week. 2 goals, and I mean, I can't actually recall a time in the highlights where he lost a ball in the air. And, I mean, the goal that I'm speaking about here, I mean, I'm pretty sure he was the only player properly in the box. Dylan Tate, I think, was maybe a half yard or maybe a yard if you're pushing it inside the box. But when the ball comes in, Duku is surrounded by about 7 Queens players. One of them tries to stop it. The other 6, I don't know what they're doing. They'd be as well just not being there. Maybe not the cleanest of headers from Duku, but a good header nevertheless. It did go kind of right out of reach of Rohan Ferguson and then in off the post. But as I say, it was dreadful defending from them, and going kind of further forward with Duku for his second and Raith's 5th goal kind of right at the end. I mean, I think it shows the kind of mentality that he's got. Never gave up, and despite being 4-2 up at this stage with only a few minutes left, when it had been easy to kind of take the foot off the gas and just kind of think the game was won, but he didn't. He kind of kept himself completely focused and took full advantage of AO Obalai's disaster class, which, I mean, was disaster after disaster. Started with him letting the ball bounce. He then proceeded to try and head the ball back with one of the worst attempts I've ever seen. Duku manages to latch on and put it past Ferguson, and Obalai just kind of collapses in a heap after it, which, I mean, I'm sure there is a clip going about somewhere on Twitter, but it is absolutely hilarious just the way he kind of collapses in defeat at how bad, and I mean, I think the way he falls is just swallow me up now, please, ground. It was dreadful, but as I say, Duku was very impressive, and someone who hasn't exactly been prolific throughout his career. I was kind of looking at some of the numbers. He's got 4-4 in all comps this season, but barring his first spell at Hayes and Yeddon maybe 4 or 5 seasons ago when he got 33 and 39 league games, he's only really scored a handful of goals each season. But for whatever reason, he's found his scoring boots in Kirkcaldy, and yeah, he's doing really well.
Yeah, definitely going to be a handful if he keeps up this early form throughout the whole season. We've touched on Queen in the South and how we are a wee bit worried about them. They put up a good fight last weekend against Ayr, and they were fine in the Betfred Cup against Morton when I watched them, but they just didn't look good here at all. Stephen Dobie's obviously got two penalties in two matches. I don't think penalties are going to save them this season. I think Daniel Armstrong's goal, I think it was Rovers' third goal, was just so simple from a defensive perspective from Queen of the South. Naughty, as I'm going to call him, is just robbed. He's so easily in the middle of the park. Regan Henry just strolls forward almost towards Queen of the South's box and lays it off for Regan Tumulty. He puts a nice ball into the box and Daniel Armstrong just taps it in the back of the net. Gregor Buchanan is completely the wrong side of Armstrong as he goes into the box. There was no challenge on Regan Henry in the middle. There was nobody near Regan Tumulty. And yeah, it was just poor all round. And that was the third goal. And you've already touched on that last goal as well. And it was funny as well. Like obviously, Ayo Obele, that's how I'm going to pronounce it. It just looks like he curls up into a ball to get over his error. But on the flip side of that, it was a really good header from him for his goal, which was Queen of the South's second. And at that point, they had enough chances after that goal to get back into the match, even. Obele had a good header cleared off the line as well. I think it was Regan Henry that cleared that. And Stephen Dobie hit the bar as well, which would have brought it back to 4-3 as well at that point. But it leaves it at 4-2. Obele, horrific header back to the keeper. And it just summed up Queen's day, and it might sum up their season as well.
Yeah, I mean, kind of like last week against Ayr, their defensive mistakes were ultimately their downfall. As you say, they had a lot of good chances. You mentioned the one cleared off the line, the one off the bar, and Jamie McDonald once again came up with a few big saves for Rovers. I mean, I don't really know how Queens can address this leaky defence. Obviously, they only conceded two last week against Ayr, but they were two avoidable goals, both from corners, and they just seem so slow to react to everything. There just doesn't seem to be any kind of urge to dive in, try and stop the ball. You mentioned Buchanan. I felt he was at fault for a few of them, and he was one of the ones that was pointing fingers most, actually, when at times I felt he could have probably done more himself.
Yeah.
I mean, I think one thing that they could definitely look to build upon is their concentration levels. So many times, as I say, slow to react, and I mean, whether up in their concentration and just being more focused, they just seem to zone out at times, and it's just a bizarre one. But it was error after error. As I say, I felt many goals are completely avoidable, and I mean, they just couldn't really stop Rafe, who were deserved winners, but the game could have been a lot closer had Queen of the South been that bit more clinical.
Yeah, I think the kind of probably summed up the whole match, to be honest, but comparing the midfields of the two, so we touched on Rovers' midfield last weekend when we talked about them. It's a young midfield, it's an energetic midfield, but Joe McKee and Rhys McCabe in the middle of the Queen of the South's midfield just got overran completely by them for the majority of this match. And I mean, I've obviously touched on McCabe and how he completely lost Ross Matthews for that opener. We've touched on how Regan Henry could just waltz through that centre of the midfield for the third goal. Dan Pybus was on the bench. I think he came on in this one. And I think he was carrying a knock, so he didn't get long at all. I think it was the last 15. But I'm wondering if when he gets back into this Queen of the South midfield, how they're going to set up. Because I think they went 4-4-2 in this one. I think it was East partnering Dobie up the front. But I think they need a bit extra in there to give them some cover, because that defence is going to be leaky this season.
Yeah, not just to provide cover, but kind of chances as well for Dobie. Obviously, as you say, two penalties in his first two games, and obviously that's great. He's scoring all his penalties, but at the same time, he needs to be getting chances into him, and whilst he can do a lot of it on his own, we've seen that in recent seasons. We've kind of seen that he does need a good partner. We've seen the Lyndon Dykes partnership from a few seasons back and kind of how that brought Dobie on, and I think if Queen's managed to find a player who can really bring out the best in Dobie and set him up, well, that's certainly going to improve their chances. But certainly right at this very moment, things aren't looking all that great for them.
No, they're definitely not. We should probably move on before any Queen of the South fans listening start switching off. Cammy, talk to us about Alloa 1, Dunfermline Athletic 4. Why didn't Kevin O'Hara start this game?
I mean, I think the fairest answer would probably be Crawford didn't want to battle Alloa by a cricket score. Kevin O'Hara came on for, 15, 20 minutes and grabbed himself a hat-trick. And, I mean, this was a absolutely sublime performance off the bench from O'Hara, of course, at Alloa last season. And despite them perhaps maybe knowing all about him, they certainly couldn't stop him. And I think they might be very glad that he wasn't on from the start, because it could have been a lot worse. But, I mean, I think the goals he scored were all good. The first one, instant impact, scored with his first touch, actually, a nice dink over Willison. Just made a huge difference. His second goal was really good. He stuck with it and managed to curl it into the far post. And then Declan McManus very kindly gave him the ball for the penalty to grab his hat-trick. And this was quite a nice thing from McManus. McManus didn't exactly have his best of games. I felt he was feeding off his scraps. And I'm not sure how much of this was down to the fact that we actually played Ryan Dow at striker alongside McManus. Dow is typically a winger or a kind of attacking midfielder, yet we kind of seen him and McManus forming a strike partnership up top. And to be fair to Ryan Dow, I did have my doubts when I kind of seen him lining up there. He played really well, got a goal after the first few minutes. That's him now got two in as many games this season. And I mean, yeah, as I say, I'm not sure how much him playing up there affected McManus, but certainly I think Dow playing there is an interesting one. Certainly gives us kind of a wild card to call upon if we need one. And he certainly played well, despite maybe not being the most physical, or maybe he's maybe not the most kind of strikerish player, but certainly impressed me with what he done in his time on the pitch.
Yeah, well, I was gonna ask you there, where do you think Ryan Dow fits into this side if Kevin O'Hara's starting, if Declan McManus is starting, if Dom Thomas is starting? Is he just kind of, he's not going to be comfortable with a place on the bench, is he? He'll want to be getting into the first team. So where does he fit in? Is it on the right hand side? Do they change the system a little bit? Where is it?
I mean, he started the first two games of the season. So, and I think against Inverness, he was out on the wing. Now, also, this is fantastic. We've got the versatility there. And I mean, I think it's perhaps going to be a depending on the opponent. We might kind of see a kind of position switch from him. He is a player who knows how to create. He can score goals. So, I mean, I'd probably prefer for him to be out on the wing, him on one wing, Dom Thomas on the other, and then McManus and O'Hara up top. But I mean, for the sake of rotation and stuff like that, we have mentioned last week about the lack of striking options that the Pars have following the loaning out of Gabby McGill to Edinburgh City. So, I mean, perhaps this was Crawford maybe testing out something in the meantime. Perhaps, I'm not entirely sure when the loan market closes. I want to say maybe the end of this month, but maybe just testing things out with regards to Dow there. He might play there until January when we might bring in another striker, or McGill will come back from Edinburgh City from his loan there, and he'll maybe fit in. So maybe it's just a case of just fiddling around the tactics and seeing what's what, but certainly Dow impressed me with his performance up top.
Yeah, I mean, I think I forgot to discuss Alloa's salty Twitter account too much last week. I had it written down to talk about and then just completely ignored it. And I'm very surprised that we've not had a very salty tweet from their Twitter account this weekend, because This goal was offside for me. When we saw the highlights, when we saw that Alloa had added a lovely VAR defensive line onto the highlights as well, I was shocked that they hadn't put that onto Twitter as well for a bit of outrage. But yeah, that first goal definitely offside for me.
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly a close one. I'd probably say he was just offside. And if he wasn't, he was just onside. It was a very, very tight call. And I mean, the Pixelot camera at Alloa certainly didn't really help with things.
No.
The camera was, it was dreadful. Now, Pixelot, I tweeted this out saying that Pixelot's fantastic. It's given clubs in the lower leagues the ability to stream their matches. And I think that's fantastic, especially at this time. But the system, I mean, it was terrible on Saturday, just constant all over the place. And granted, it wasn't as bad as the Inverness game. We did see on Twitter that it was actually focusing in on the linesman's bald head rather than the ball. While Stars was focusing on the ball, it did just seem to be all over the place. Unlike kind of the game against Dumbarton in the Betfred Cup, which I felt the system was a lot more sturdy. Now, whether this is a calibration issue or I really don't know. I'm not an expert on this system, but it was a far from enjoyable experience watching it on the pick slot system. And obviously, that's no fault of Alloa's. But yeah, not the greatest kind of system. And whilst on the topic of Alloa, want to give a wee shout out to our pure championship pal, Kieran Mooney, for his job on the commentary. Despite the issues that they were clearly kind of dealing with, and although they both apologised for it and stuff, I felt Kieran done a really good job. So from pure championship to Alloa's commentary, I mean, fantastic for Kieran. So what about Alloa then, Chris? Did you feel they were kind of unlucky in this one?
I thought they were. I think it feels ridiculous to say that on the end of a 4-1 defeat, but I think it reminded me quite a lot of their matches last season as well, where they played well, but got beat, and this was exactly the same. I think Dunfermline did have less shots overall, but their shots were of a better quality, and obviously that results in the 4-1 win. Prolific finishing, obviously. You mentioned Kevin O'Hara. Cammy, we both play Football Manager, and we know that if you've got a player on your side that used to play for your opponents, then you need to start them because they are guaranteed to score. And Stevie Crawford needs to keep that in mind when they play Alloa in future, and especially after this hat-trick as well. But anyway, with a little bit more luck, I thought Alloa, I'm going to even say it could have even been a drop. Like, I think Alloa had chances, and that's 2 weeks in a row now that they've deserved much more than what they've actually come out with in the end. I think Ennis Murray, who's on loan from Hibs, not to be confused with your Murray that you've got on loan from Hibs, he popped up with an assist for Kevin Colley's goal. It was a lovely header. Robert Thompson's header was brilliantly saved by Owen Fawn-Williams, and Alan Troughton should definitely score that rebound. I don't think Fawn-Williams knew much about it at all. And then I think Alan Troughton had another big chance again at 2-1 down, which I think Thompson flicked it on again, and Troughton just fluffed it right over the bar. And there was chances in the game. And then, like you said, O'Hara comes on and it's just ruthlessness from him. And a little bit of kind of errors coming in at the back as well from Alloa, obviously, for that. I think it was O'Hara's second goal where he comes in. And just finishes it into the bottom corner after, I think, John Robertson slides in and just completely mistimes his tackle. And obviously that penalty at the end to finish it off for the fourth goal. So unlucky, obviously, but a little bit of their own downfall when all things are done.
Yeah, I mean, I think the 4-1 scoreline, as you say, certainly makes things look a lot worse than they actually were. I agree with you. It probably would have been fair for the game to end in a draw. Alloa were, as you say, had more chances than the Pars, but just weren't as clinical. And I mean, I think, again, as you say, last season they were so unlucky, and they just didn't get what they deserved out of matches. And I mean, I think they will be real annoyed at this one, but I guess kind of from when Kevin O'Hara came on to after, you can't really argue that Alloa deserved anything at that point, but given just how quickly O'Hara completely turned the game on its head and they couldn't have an answer for it. But I mean, definitely unfair and unlucky for them that they maybe never got anything out of this one. As you say, there was that kind of double save that Fawn Williams made and that one that was blazed over the bar. And yeah, I mean, I think Alloa are going to be annoyed with this one, but I think they can certainly still take positives from it. They held what are kind of seen as one of the main kind of playoff contenders this season for, granted, the Pars scored after about 5 or 6 minutes, but kind of kept the score down. Obviously, the Pars attacking qualities have been on show in the early part of this season, but Alloa done really well to kind of stop that as best he could before O'Hara came on, and they kept playing their football, which is something we've always praised them for. They're not a team who just abandons their game plan the second things kind of start going wrong. They stick to their guns, and on this occasion, it just didn't work for them, but in the coming weeks, I'm sure things will become a bit better for Alloa.
Yeah, I was just going to say exactly the same, because I think you look at what happened in the Queen of the South game, and then you compare that to this Alloa game, and you just get the feeling that Alloa are going to pick up points soon, whereas you just don't get that feeling when you look at Queen of the South at the moment, do you?
No, not at all.
Yeah, strange one. But yeah, I think Alloa will be probably fine come the end of the season, and it feels It still feels too early to be saying things after two match days, but I am going to stick with that at the moment. Let's move on again. You said it in that last game when you were talking about picks a lot. We were surprised that we were able to watch highlights of this match because we thought it would just be 10 minutes of the linesman's baldy head. But Inverness Cali drew 1-1 with Ayr United. Cammy, this was end-to-end, this match. I really enjoyed watching the highlights for it. Todorov, I mean, I'll come on to him if you don't come on to him, but I think this was one of his best games in Inverness shirt. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, this was an end-to-end game, chances galore, and I mean, one right at the very start that I want to speak about involving Todorov was whether it was in or not. Now, he sent a header in the direction of Sinistalo, who kind of tipped it onto the bar and then bounced off the ground, off the bar, off the ground, off the post. Now, I'd watched the replay, I really have no idea if that went in or not, and a very, very close one. But as you say, Todorov was excellent. That's another goal for him this week. He got one last week against Dunfermline, and we raised our concerns regarding Inverness's attack, but Todorov seems to have stepped up, and that, as I say, two goals in 2 weeks, and you can't really complain with that. He's looking like a player who has certainly got his scoring boots on at the moment, and a player who I think could well maybe be a kind of surprise star of this season, because he wasn't a player that was really on our radar heading into this season.
No, definitely. I think I praised Jordan White so much last season. I was a big fan of his. I thought he played brilliantly in that system that Inverness had going. And I think if you look at this season, Todorov can be that replacement for Jordan White in that role that he vacated. You mentioned that chance that he had really early on. I'm not sure if it went over the line. I'm probably going to err on that side that it wasn't a goal. And obviously we'll touch on his goal in a second, but he had quite a few chances as well to add to it before he did eventually get his goal. Daniel Mackay, one of the passes of the season so far, I'm going to say it, in the Championship, but I thought it was a brilliant pass from him, big chance for Todorov to be through on goal, basically. But Jack Baird gets across really well to cover Sam Roscoe and put Todorov off. I think he had another couple of chances in the second half as well. I think it was probably at least three that he had before he got his goal, but when he did get his goal, it was a lovely finish, and I thought his overall hold-up play was really good, to kind of connected the side together. My final thing on Todorov, I thought his celebration was absolutely hilarious as well. I don't know if you noticed it, but he basically ignored most of his teammates and then just did a knee slide in front of the empty main stand. So he was clearly delighted about getting that goal in this one.
Just before we move on to discuss Ayr, I want to kind of discuss Todorov's goal and the kind of way it came about. Now, I felt that in the second half, Ayr probably edged this one, and I think they will be kicking themselves. Well, edged the second half, should I say, because I'd say Inverness definitely edged the first half with the number of chances they had. But, I mean, given that Ayr conceded so late on, and I think they're going to be kicking themselves, especially when, I can't remember who it was that played the ball into Todorov, but the amount of people that kind of leapt towards it, tried to stop it, and all missed it. I mean, I think Mark Kerr's going to be rather annoyed at that one, that they managed to kind of throw away what would have been a massive result against a fellow playoff contender.
No, you're right. And just to touch on who played the ball in for Todorov, it was Ryan Fife, who is a 19-year-old defender that came on for Brad Mackay. Now, that is relevant because he also, Kai Kennedy came on for James Keatings with 20 minutes to go. Kai Kennedy's 18. The average age of Inverness's outfield starting players was 22.5. And that's Cameron Harper and Roddy McGregor. They're both 18. Daniel Mackay, who I've already mentioned, played that lovely through ball for Todorov, is 19. Robbie Dees, who's obviously a pure Championship and a big favourite of Gav's from the main show, he's 20. Wallace Duffy, who obviously joined in the summer, is 21. And then Scott Allardyce is a new signing, age 22 as well. Like, that is a young, young team that Inverness had out. And then obviously the two players coming off the bench are 18 and 19 as well. I think if Inverness can get Aaron Doran and David Carson back fit, they've obviously got Sean Welsh still to come in too. Miles Storey's not back yet. Really good mix of youth and experience there. I was looking at it as well. Obviously, I think you mentioned Shane Sutherland on the preview pod. not seen him in the league yet either, although I had no idea he was 30 years old. I feel like he was like 25 or something like that. But I think Inverness's young guns, as I'm going to call them, are looking quite good and quite promising at this early stage of the season.
Yeah, they are. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how they cope over the course of the season. And Inverness in general, we've spoken about the number of players they lost to Premiership clubs in the summer. They obviously lost a few in the January window as well. And the season before, they'd also lost a lot of kind of their star players. Now, they kind of replaced those players with kind of older players, but this year they've kind of went with a few loan players, and they're kind of trying to go forward with some of their own players. Now, I mean, I can't think of many better managers in Scotland to do that than with John Robertson. Of course, maybe not a manager most well known for his youth development, but certainly a manager very well known for his ability to kind of cope with, I'm not quite sure how you'd put it, kind of cope with
adversity almost.
Yeah, like a heavy turnover of a squad and diverse squads. He always seems to get a tune out of the team regardless of who he's got. And I think that says a lot about him. And yeah, as you say, the young guns are certainly putting on a show at the moment for Inverness.
Yeah, definitely. So let's move on to Ayr. Cammy, you said that they had big chances as well and probably shaded the second half.
Yeah, they did have chances, as I said. They did probably edge that second half. And I mean, before kind of speaking too much, one thing I do want to point out in their goal is the fantastic run of Cammy Smith. Now, Smith joined them on loan from Dundee United just a kind of a few days ago. And I mean, what a fantastic signing this is for Aaron. He would have been a fantastic signing for any championship club. Now, Smith, who won the championship with St Mirren a few seasons ago and was part of the Dundee United squad last season, although he was loaned out to, I believe it was Dundalk for the second half of last season, he kind of picked the ball up pretty much right at the edge of his box, walks past two or three of their players, and with a really nice pass took out, I think, four or five Inverness players, and then he teed up another new kind of loanee at Somerset Park in Ennis Cameron from Ayrshire rivals Kelly, who took the goal really well. Cameron is a player who, I think it was a season or two ago, was at Stranraer and kind of played quite well. I think he got double figures for goals and maybe wasn't that far off for assists either for them. And I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see how he copes in the championship. Obviously, he proved himself kind of at League One level, and I mean, that's another good option that Ayr now have. Well, I'm saying one option. Smith and Cameron are both really good options that Ayr have in the attack, in addition to Bruce Anderson, who we've already said could be maybe a dark horse for the title race. Now, as I said, when discussing Inverness, I think Ayr will be annoyed at the fact that they conceded so late on, given the number of chances they did have. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I thought, well, obviously you mentioned Cameron there, like that was his first touch after he came on as well, so some way to introduce yourself to the match. They could have grabbed it at the end as well. I think Mark Ridgers saves really well from Cammy Smith's free kick. I think it was earlier on in the match. This could have been in the first half, to be fair, but Michael Miller almost got his third goal of the season. He had one cleared off the line. It was just before half time, so and there was a bit of a stramash earlier on too. Mark Ridgers had saved again from a good Cammy Smith effort too. So Ayr had chances, Inverness had chances. This one was end-to-end. I think probably the most end-to-end match we've had this season. And I completely agree with you on Ayr as well. I think I tipped them for second in our preview predictions pod, and I'm still sticking by that at the moment. I was quite impressed with Inverness and obviously their kind of depth in terms of the young guns, but Dario Zanata hasn't featured yet for Ayr in the league. Tom Walsh hasn't featured for Ayr yet in the league. Jordan Houston came on in this one, just got some minutes under his belt, so I think he'll be returning to the side soon, probably moving Aaron Muirhead into the middle and bringing Sam Roscoe out of that starting lineup, because I don't think Ayr fans are quite as enamoured with Sam Roscoe as maybe we had been at some points last season. And then that front line of Ennis Cameron, Cammy Smith and Bruce Anderson, they'll cause problems this season completely, and I think it'll be interesting to see how they fit everybody in when everybody's fit. Right, let's move on to Dundee 1, Greenock Morton 0. Obviously, I paid Dundee £12.50 to watch this one on the stream. It was a very, very strange game. I mean, we'll come on to that in a second. But I just wanted to quickly touch on kind of Morton's attack versus defence is how I'm kind of titling this bit of chat. I think Morton's lineup suggested that we would sit in and attempt to soak up Dundee coming forward, and that I did write exactly what that's exactly what happened, but it probably wasn't on reflection. I think the start of the game was kind of like the last 20 minutes or so versus Alloa as well, where Morton were just sitting back, launching it long to not that many options up front. I think with Calvin Orsi, Cameron Salkeld and Cammy Blues in this team, you can kind of see what David Hopkin was attempting here, running about quite a lot, pressing Dundee. But the three of them, for me anyway, don't have that much actual natural footballing ability. Now, the thing with that is that Hopkin came out after the match and said that they were setting up to attack Dundee, which, looking back at it, is just a ridiculous statement to make. I think that if he wanted to set up to attack, there was definitely a fair few changes that he could have made. I think Salkeld, you can move him to right back, bring in Gary Oliver to play up front. I think you could take Cameron Blues out. Luca Colville could go in there. He's a bit more creative. You could play Aidan Nesbitt from the start. Absolutely no idea why he was on the bench for this one. And then Lewis Strapp, obviously, I think he had been kind of struggling with a dead leg, I believe, but his long throw ability could have put Dundee under pressure. But for Hopkin to come out and say that they were looking, setting up to attack Dundee, is a ridiculous statement to make, especially with the way that the first kind of 60 to 70 minutes of this match went, because it was very evident that we were not attacking Dundee whatsoever.
No, it definitely wasn't, and I'm certainly glad that I didn't pay £12.50 like you did to watch this one, and I caught the Morton highlights that, I must say, were from a rather peculiar angle, kind of halfway up what is typically the away end at Dens Park. Now, as I say, this was quite a miserable watch for someone who only watched 10 minutes via highlights. Fortunately, I didn't watch a full 90 minutes like you did, but I completely agree with what you say regarding Hopkins' statement regarding attacking being ridiculous. As you say, so many more options in that squad that, and kind of different setups that could have allowed to be more attacking. And I mean, given Dundee's performance in this match, which was far from the kind of level we'd expect from Dundee, I mean, Morton could have certainly went more attacking in this and perhaps got something out of this one, but it wasn't to be. I mean, I think Dundee will probably be delighted they've managed to get a win out of this one. I think their only really decent chance was a goal, and that wasn't even really that clear-cut of a chance either. It was kind of a half chance that maybe Morton could have defended a bit better, and Afolabi obviously finished it past McAdams. But yeah, Dundee really disappointed me in this one, and I mean, I think, as I say, Morton could have probably done more and got someone out of this one, but Dundee were just, I don't know, they were absolutely thumped 6-2 off the Hearts, obviously in the first week of the season, and was kind of expecting a bit more of a reaction. Kind of, we're not here to just get beat and get thumped by Hearts. We can come and do this to other teams and stuff like that, but it just wasn't like that at all. They were just, there's just not many words that you can actually describe the performance as that I think are maybe PG. It was very, very poor.
Yeah, I think that's why I said it was a weird game, because yes, Dundee won the match, and yes, they scored the goal, and while the goal was a good finish from Afolabi, it was poor defending from my perspective. I think all three centre-backs that kind of defend the area of the six-yard box, as opposed to at least one of them picking up that one man that any three of them could have picked up. And I think so many times as well in that first half, it was kind of seven Morton defenders on three Dundee players going forward, and Dundee still found time and space to kind of operate. And I say operate because they didn't really create much else apart from the goal that they scored. And that's why it was a really strange game. I think Morton didn't really attack Dundee until, like I said, the last maybe 20 minutes or so, and did have a couple of chances, but I really wasn't impressed with Dundee at all, in all honesty. I think they really didn't do anything of note, and especially so in that second half, and especially so when Morton went down to 10 men as well. I mean, you'll come on in a second and talk about this too, but I'd noted down when I was watching the match live, kind of Robbie Muirhead, it was obviously directly going up against Declan McDade, and we liked McDade. I think he looked tricky last season. He maybe doesn't get that kind of appreciation, or he doesn't really get that much. He doesn't really get a run in the Dundee side quite a lot of the time. And I think that he caused Muirhead all sorts of problems in that first half, like I said, when Dundee were kind of on top. But it is time to stop the Robbie Muirhead at left wing back experiment for Morton. And yes, he got sent off here. Two of the stupidest yellow cards I've ever seen. And I'm actually glad he's going to be suspended and not playing, because we actually looked better when he went off. The Morton fans, none of them are excusing what he did, because like I said, it was a very, very stupid sending off. But some of them are saying he carries the ball quite well, whereas others are saying he's just so ineffectual and virtually offers nothing. And I'm definitely in that kind of latter camp, because I just don't see what he brings to this team. And I don't know why he was given a contract for this season, because he didn't look like he brought anything to the team last season either.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that about Muirhead. Obviously, you'd mentioned earlier on about players who seem to lack any kind of natural football ability, and I think you could certainly add Muirhead to that. Obviously, he came through and was really highly rated, but he has done absolutely nothing for years and years now. And I mean, you've just got to say fair play to him for getting sent off. He didn't even foul anyone, and he managed to get two yellow cards and sent off within, what, 10 seconds?
Pretty much.
Like, the first one came from him protesting a throw-in. The highlights don't actually show whether this was contentious at all, although, going by what you told me, I don't think it really was contentious, so a waste of a yellow card there, and he could have just kept his mouth shut. And then, after booking, he sarcastically claps his hands at the referee, and you can only laugh because...
I wasn't laughing when I was watching it live.
No, definitely not. He's not.
It's just stupidity. Like, it's sheer stupidity. And yeah, there's no excusing it. And like, even taking out that red card and the stupidity of it, like, I don't know why he is playing in that position. Obviously, Lewis Strapp has, like I said, has been kind of out with a bit of a dead leg, a bit of an injury, but don't play Robbie Muirhead at left wing back. Like, come on. I honestly don't know what matches. He must be amazing in training, because he's not done anything of note in a Morton top, and he continually gets chances from David Hopkin, and it's time for him not to get any more chances, because that was just the final straw on Saturday for me, to be honest. I'm sick of talking about it now. Let's move on to discuss the last match of the weekend, and it was actually the first match of the weekend, and that was Arbroath 0, Hearts 1. Obviously, as we mentioned, we were briefly talking about Dundee there. Hearts won 6-2 against them last week, and it was just 1-0 this week. What happened, Cammy?
I mean, I think the most obvious thing was the directness in Hearts' play. Now, kind of very early on in the match, they were forced into a change when Josh Ginnelly was forced off by an injury, and they just didn't really seem to have that same kind of intensity and directness that we saw from them against Dundee that served them so well. Ginnelly, obviously really quick, was getting on the ball a lot last week, getting lots of balls in, and they just never really had that. And it was just a kind of flat performance from Hearts in the first half, and maybe in the second half it changed slightly. They did appear to change to a two up top system. I'm saying they weren't that direct. Their goal actually had come from a direct ball right from the defence. Michael Smith right up, Craig White, and kind of, I think it was Colin Hamilton.
Hamilton kind of, he was caught underneath it really. It was quite poor kind of positioning from Hamilton. It wasn't really a challenge between them, was it?
No, and like, and the commentators and the pundits at halftime, I had kind of said, well, maybe he could have made more of a meal of it, and there was a chance he could have got a foul out of it. But I mean, I think it's possible up there with Obalai's kind of collapse. I think he could have certainly been a bit stronger, and they could have avoided the goal. But you've got to say fair play to Whiting for the goal as well. Gaston comes rushing out, and Whiting with an absolutely perfectly weighted dink manages to get it just over Gaston. I think it maybe comes off his fingertip, and I mean, I think if he hits it any harder, it's hitting off the bar and going over. If he hits it any less, it's going right off of Gaston's face, and he's not scoring. So, I mean, I think that was a really good goal for Whiting, who's someone who's started the season really well this year, and someone who is maybe papered over the cracks we've seen with regards to Liam Boyce and his poor performances. He's not exactly performed to me or you expected him to. We were kind of expecting him to take the league by storm. Obviously, Hearts paid a fair bit of money for him back in January when they were still in the Premiership. And, I mean, in the few times I'd seen him for Hearts, he looked a decent player and certainly a player who could do a job at Championship. But he just hasn't really had that much luck, certainly this season anyway. But Whiting seems to be someone who's doing well. And after the game, Robbie Nielsen was asked what Whiting needs to do to get into the team. And he simply responded, get more goals. But for me, I can't understand why Whiting's not in the team. He scored the hat-trick against Rafe in the Betfred Cup, wasn't amongst the starters against Dundee.
Came on in this one and won the match for them.
Exactly, and obviously we'll need to wait and see. Obviously they're not playing this weekend in Championship anyway. They're playing Edinburgh rivals Hibs in the Scottish Cup, but whether he's then back in the lineup for the next Championship game, we'll need to wait and see. But I think certainly you've got to take advantage of your goal scorers when they're scoring goals. Sticking with Boyce, I mean, you've paid big money, he's probably one of the highest earners, I understand that, but goals win you games, Whiting's doing that, so stick Whiting in the team.
Yeah, I think it's a tricky one, isn't it? I think Boyce probably fits into Naismith's plan A of how they want to play, and I think we saw that against Dundee last week, and I think he's tried to be consistent with that tactical setup this week too, but obviously with a few changes in the personnel as well. Elliot Freer started this one. Jordan Roberts was out injured. I wasn't all that impressed with Freer other than his long-range effort that he had that just went wide of the post. Andy Halliday came in for Andy Irving. And then, obviously, you've mentioned Ginelli went off injured early doors. So I'm not exactly sure what Hearts need is Andy Halliday. I think he almost gifted Chris Doolan a goal when he wasn't fully concentrating and just passed it back to him in his own box. But like last season, Nielsen got criticised quite a bit for not really having a plan B for Dundee United. And this looked like another one of those matches. Or it looked like it was going to be another one of those matches before, as you mentioned, Craig Whiting popped up with that good finish. I think Hearts had about 20, 21, 22 shots in total, I think it was. And there was less than a handful of clear chances bar the goal. And I think they definitely will have been disappointed not to test Derek Gaston out a bit more, because just over 20% of their shots were actually on target as well. So not that many at all. And they were lucky to come away with a win here.
Yeah, they were. And I mean, I think it would be fair to say we'd been insane to think that Hearts were going to turn up, win every game by scoring six goals. And perhaps I'm trying to look at a positive from this one is maybe the fact that this result will probably ground them. Of course, they won, but the fact that they had to really work for this one, and very nearly, as you say, they could have lost it, actually. Doolan had a good chance, and then Michael Roof was very unfortunate not to score right at the kind of death, which would have made it a draw, but had Doolan scored, it would have been a win. I think last season we've seen with Dundee United, they obviously started fantastically well, and when they kind of got beat after their kind of good start, the kind of wheels fell off. They really struggled. They didn't really perform to the kind of same level. And I think Hearts can certainly see this as important. It's happened now when we're only 2 weeks into the season and they've still won, rather than them going on a good run and then collapsing kind of later on. Obviously, season is shorter this year and teams can't really afford to go on kind of poor runs. So I think it's certainly a good result in that regard for Hearts. It might refocus them and cause them to maybe approach matches against these part-time sides in a kind of different manner. Nielsen's Dundee United, I think, certainly underestimated both Alloa and Arbroath last year. And I think maybe similarly against Arbroath on Friday, Hearts kind of underestimated them and didn't think that Arbroath would be as good as they were. Obviously, Arbroath were well beaten by Rafe on week one, but came back and were the Arbroath that we know and love in this game. But unfortunately, they never got anything out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to get all XG on you now, Cammy, but our both's XG for this match was about 0.8 and Hearts's was 1.1. So it was actually a very close match, and it could well have been a 1-1 draw, like you mentioned. Well, I already mentioned Chris Doolan's chance when Andy Halliday passed it back to them. You mentioned Michael Ruth's late one earlier on. I think if Luke Donnelly plays a better pass to Ruth, that's an equaliser for me. But Ruth has to kind of check back on his left foot, and it just deflects past the post. And at the end of the day, I think this was Arbroath kind of back to their best, like we saw last season. Your man Mikko Rantanen had a very good game. I think he won about 70% of all the challenges that he put in, which was the most out of any Arbroath player. So he was all action in that middle of the park again. And the only other thing I spotted for Arbroath is that they did have just five players on the bench. And I know that some of the other clubs in the league are running with smaller clubs this season, but do you think that they could still get one or two on loan before that loan window shuts as well, which I think is soon?
Yeah, I mean, I think Arbroath last season, I can't remember them having all that big a squad either, but one or two bodies certainly wouldn't go amiss. Obviously, against Raith, they were missing a few defenders, and I'd say, if anywhere, it's probably defenders they need to look at, but they were missing Captain Fantastic Tam O'Brien for this match, and despite that, they defended really well. As you say, and as I said, Arbroath back to their best, proved to be really hard to break down for Hearts, limited them to not fantastic chances, and yeah, I think they'll certainly be annoyed that they never got anything out of this one, and I think this result is proof of a few things. One, never take anything for granted in this league. Hearts were expected to absolutely thump Arbroath, yet this wasn't the case, and two, Arbroath are going to continue to be a difficult team for anyone to deal with, especially at home. Although I wouldn't say the weather had all that of an effect in this game, it's certainly something that's spoken about a lot and will probably benefit them throughout the season. And I think the stat that was mentioned either at halftime or the end of the game was that Arbroath fans have one of the best home records in Scotland in recent seasons. And to hear that, I must admit, I wasn't really that surprised. And yeah, hopefully Arbroath can get up and running, because similarly to kind of Alloa, who have also lost both of their opening games, and unlike Queen of the South, who've done the same, Arbroath are kind of more like Alloa in the sense that they've got that kind of feeling about them that they are going to pick up points and they'll be fine, whereas, as we said, Queen of the South don't really have that about them at the moment.
That's match day two for us then, Cammy. As you mentioned already, Hearts are in Scottish Cup action this coming weekend, so there is only four matches on Saturday, and those four matches are... We've got Inverness against Arbroath. We've got Dunfermline Athletic, Queen of the South, or should I say your Dunfermline Athletic, Cammy. We've got Gunnick Morton against Ayr, and we've got Dundee against Raith. Whichever team you support, enjoy the match, and we'll be back next week to go through the biggest talking points from match day three with you. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next time.